Hi, I'm Dan Cottrell, editor of Rugby Coach Weekly. You're about to jump into one of our podcasts. If you want to find out more about this podcast and also all of the great content, drills, activities, games and advice on the website, then go over to www.rugbycoachweekly.net. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Again, if you just go in to arrive at your rugby club and, okay, we're doing this training drill today, that one next day, and then we're playing on Sunday, I actually think you miss an opportunity to really energise them and motivate them around something which is very primal, as I said, and that is being part of this shared identity.
Rugby Coach Weekly presents The Coaching Knife, where we cut to the root, cut out the fluff, and challenge the masters of their domain to cut to the chase. Welcome to The Coaching Knife, when we cut to the root of the matter. In this episode, we speak to Owen Eastwood, performance coach of team culture and leadership and author of Belonging, The Ancient Code of Togetherness. Focusing on building better teams, we're going to cut to the root on how to use belonging with your group or team. Owen, are you ready for the knife?
I am.
How do you start to create belonging for your team?
First thing I would do is have a think about it, actually. Don't listen to someone like me. Have a think about it. Is belonging important?
So if I'm going to start that, where do I start with what is belonging? Because it's a word which I think people probably need to get a better understanding of what it means.
I completely agree. And I think the best definition will be everyone's personal experience with it. So for me, belonging is when you go into an environment surrounded by other people, and actually your anxiety levels are quite low, you feel comfortable, you feel you can be yourself. There's something in that environment which is making you feel like, I think they like me here. I think they sort of, the leaders care about me. I think I can trust the people around me. I think we're going to do something quite cool together. That's what it feels like to belong. That has a massive hormonal impact on you. What it feels like not to belong is I go into an environment, I feel like I'm an outsider, that people are judging me, waiting on me to make a mistake. And if it doesn't go well here, I'll be rejected from this group pretty quickly.
As a coach, you come into these situations, and it'd be brilliant if you had the first, but sometimes you kind of come in with the second. Are you saying that if you don't get the first, then you with the second, where you don't feel like you belong, you're going to struggle?
Every human being who goes into an environment is going in an anxious state. It's not a matter of whether you've got the first, you've got to create the first. It's not right. One or the other.
Right.
It's the experience of the individual. So everyone, if I go into a new team tomorrow, no matter how experienced and confident I am, I'll have anxiety.
Right.
And it can be little things, a big smile, someone coming to greet me, eye contact, someone saying something nice about it, I'm valued. That will lower my anxiety and give me more a sense that I belong. And we can get into the reasons why that's actually pretty important. But you've got to create it for people. It's not a natural thing that exists within a person. It's something that comes to them from the environment.
Okay, so let's. How do we create it then? What would be the first few things? So you're stepping into a new environment. What are you doing first?
The first thing we actually would do is not get into the tactical, technical, which even at an elite level, I see some people come into international camp and there's a meeting about what the training regimen will be for the next few days and what the logistics are. And no one actually creates a space, for example, to say, hey, welcome everybody, and including the new people who have never been here before. You've earned the right to be here. You belong here. And this is actually what we're all about. We've got a sense of purpose to this team. We've got these games ahead. This is something we're incredibly excited about. We think we could do something special. Just create a sense of what the hell this team is about, what we're actually trying to achieve together, and just telling people, not in sort of obscure ways, but in very direct ways, you've earned the right to be here and you belong here, and this is going to be an amazing experience we're going to have together.
Now, I can see that's going to work with some players and some people. They're going to love that, but other people are going to say, this is a load of fluffy nonsense. I just want to know, what are we doing next, and will I be selected? How do you think with those?
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I mean, the fluffy nonsense, but I can counteract that pretty quickly with teams like the New Zealand All Blacks, which I don't believe are very fluffy, do hormonal testing of players, which are complete hard evidence that when you actually signal to players, look them in the eye, talk to them, welcome them, explain what the hell we're doing and what's special about wearing the shirt, when you do those things, you get rises in these very important energizing hormones like dopamine, And what
okay, so I can see, right, I can absolutely see how that works for the All Blacks. I mean, anyone who would be thinking that they're able to put on their national shirt, especially, say, someone like the All Blacks, you're going to have all these wonderful things. If you are turning up to play for, say, Stow-on-the-World under-12s, this is not going to be the same sort of feeling because you don't know what it's like, or you haven't seen on the television, or you haven't got those icons to rest your to think about.
No, that's not right. This is a universal human condition that we have a need to belong. I'll give you an example. When my daughter, we relocated from New Zealand to England, she was a five-year-old. She came into a classroom, and the teacher, for some sort of slightly obscure reason, decided on her first day to sort of put her at the end of a table, not actually introduce her to the class, and not have a personal conversation with her really about the school, the class, how she fits in. And she went from this confident little girl to this very anxious girl, completely changed her nature and her behaviours until the next year when she had a more enlightened teacher who welcomed her in and made her feel she belonged there. So,
the important thing here is for a youngster, when they arrive, you have to help them feel that they belong to the group.
You don't have to. It's up to coaches to decide whatever they want to do in terms of building a team culture. Mm. I suppose where I'm coming from is this is not about fluff. What my job is working mainly in the elite level is how do we create the best environment for people to thrive? And if people are marinating in anxiety, because we have this millions and millions year old primal mindset of anxiety if we don't feel we belong somewhere, then that is crazy. And I'd give an example in belonging, Hashim Amla, another example, the first ever Muslim player to play cricket for South Africa. It's got nothing about being a superstar or whatever. He did not feel he belonged because when he looked in that room, everyone seemed different to him and everyone was different to him. But nobody made any steps towards him to say, hey, it's fantastic to have you here. Congratulations, you've earned the right to be. No one said, they left him alone, basically waiting for him to perform at a level and then they'd start engaging with him. And this is what happens all the time in all levels of sport. People can get left alone to sort of marinate in their anxiety. They can't be the best version of themselves in that state. And basically people will, including coaches, start being friendly and start spending time with them once they start performing and show that they can actually make everyone else look better. And that's not how you get the best out of people. If you put everyone in that situation, you'll get an amazing world-class talents who never go anywhere because they couldn't handle that initial environment. They just couldn't perform. And Hash is a good example. He averaged 10 in his first year in international cricket, 10, and was dropped for a year and a half. And then a more enlightened management was there and he ended up averaging 50. It's just a very simple example.
So what we're approaching it the wrong way around. We're getting people to perform first or wanting to perform first to sense they're part of the team. So you've almost got to get your first good performance in and then you're in. Actually, we need to change that round and start from a different angle.
Correct. And it's what I want to reiterate is there's nothing to do about elite sport or this is a part of human nature. Some people don't feel they belong in families just simply because of the behaviour of people around them. When I started performance coaching, I was very lucky to do an amazing project with the 3 4-star generals who run NATO. And before we started, I was incredibly anxious and I was in their environment. I didn't feel I belonged there on any level, really. I was a bit of imposter syndrome. But the leader, who was the most senior military officer in the US, Admiral Jim Stavridis, just came over to me at the start and gave me a big smile, said, hey, I've just been to New Zealand a couple of weeks ago, met with your prime minister, visited the vineyards. I've heard a lot about you from the consultants. They say you're great. I really can't wait for today. Now, that completely changed my whole state and therefore the way I was able to perform that day compared to how I arrived that day. That's just an enlightened leader. So that's the power you can have on people.
Right. So it can go at all levels from grassroots up to the top level. And now we're going to go back to the very start of this. So when someone arrives, let's say you've been the coach for a while and someone arrives, you've got to create this sort of sense of belonging. So what are the things which are going to make a difference where you can really say, you talked a bit about the shirt and the history. What sort of other things or things around that can make a difference?
Well, I think these apply to whether it's the England football team who I work with or Stow in the World under 12s. Belonging has two aspects to it. The first part is actually someone sending you pretty explicit messages that you belong here and that you're welcome here and that we care about you and this is going to be a good experience for you. And I think there's no reason not to be explicit about those things. The other side of belonging is belonging to what? So whatever the team is, even if it's still under 12s, there should be a conversation about, hey, we're not playing for ourselves here. We're playing for something. We're playing for this club. And this club's been around since 1879. It's pretty cool. And actually, all the people on that sideline who come and watch us, your parents and your grandparents, and they care about this place. And we are a sort of hardworking area. And people enjoy on a Sunday to come and watch a rugby and see some tough, hardworking, good kids throwing the ball around. So that's who we are, and that's why we're here. And we think, given this group, we could have a great season. And that's not just about results at all. We just want to see everybody really enjoy yourself. We want to make sure we move the ball so everyone has an opportunity to express what they bring here. I want everyone to feel included in this. So we start to build a picture up of about, so it becomes quite strong that actually this is a pretty cool team, this. This sounds really good. I feel like I belong here, and I also feel it's pretty cool what we're trying to do. And I feel like everyone's going to be involved, and it's not going to be just about three or four staff players. So all of that messaging is, if you're representing a nation, that's one narrative, but actually most people aren't doing that. But I think, again, if you just go in to arrive at your rugby club and, okay, we're doing this training drill today, that one next day, and then we're playing on Sunday, I actually think you miss an opportunity to really energise them and motivate them around something which is very primal, as I said, and that is being part of this shared identity.
So now, then, well, not inevitably, but will there be sort of players who don't belong and you've actually got to, and it's very hard to change their minds or change the way that they approach it, or is everybody able to belong?
That's a great question. In my experiences, I've seen some players who walk into an environment with a smile on their face and their assumption is that, yeah, I think I belong here. And they've come from a nice, stable family. They've gone to good schools. And they've had a lifetime of experiences, which is pretty safe when you go into a new environment. But I also work with people at the very top whose life story tells them the complete opposite. That is, from a dysfunctional family to a chaotic school to being treated in a very transactional way through the pathways. And actually their life story is, don't trust this place. So I think it's part of a good coach is to be able to pick up on the different personalities in the team. Some people, like my son, he's pretty good to go. You know, he doesn't need a whole lot. He'll go with you. But there are some kids who have had some brutal experiences in their life and are very anxious around other people, want to play, but don't trust anything around them. And I think good coaching would mean that you would want to get to know them a little bit better, get to know a little bit about their story, and show them some direct signaling that, hey, I've got your back, fella, and this is going to be okay, this is going to be good. Just trust us. And if we do anything against what we said we were, if I do that as a coach, I want you to come and talk to me about it, all right? So there's different ways.
So this is going to be tough to do, obviously, and not all of us are going to be able to spend all our time doing this. But obviously, we've got to give a little bit more to some of these players who are struggling. Now, what are the things you've got to try and avoid doing with these players who are struggling to not sort of put them off completely? Because sometimes they're not going to want to open up because of what you've just said. And for you to then start asking them questions, they may become very defensive. So how can we just be a little bit, tread carefully and still get some good outcomes?
Well, the absolutely number one thing to do is build an environment of trust. Trust is simply people's forecast of what's going to happen next. That's what trust is. If I trust you, my forecast is that you're going to do what you said you're going to do. If I don't trust you, my forecast is that you may do something different. So the best thing is not about one-on-one conversations. You don't get into someone's face in the first day and trying to give them all this reassurance. Actually, the best thing you can do for people is to create a high trust environment. So that means a couple of things. One is you friggin' do what you say you will do. If you say that this is a place where we are supportive and we're encouraging and da-da-da, and then you start screaming at people for dropping a ball or taking a risk in a pass, which doesn't come off, that's not helpful. I mean, it doesn't matter even if people are young or even if they're not particularly bright, people are very good at picking up whether this is a consistent, trusting environment or not. So that's the main thing for the coach, for the leaders, is to whatever you're going to say, make sure you do it. Deeds need to follow that. Once you do that, you will create, you'll sow the conditions for a bit of trust to start building. And the one-on-one chats with those who may have come from tricky environments is more something that happens later to keep pushing them on. It's not something that replaces any of that. So that's where I go with that. The other thing is, I think if coaches can be a bit vulnerable and role model certain things, that's very, very helpful.
So just a bit more about that, vulnerable and role model.
Yeah, like just staying there and saying, hey, guys, I'm not the best coach in the world, not the perfect coach. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to get really excited about some of the sessions that I design and they're not going to come off. So I don't expect you to be perfect either. So let's all sort of buy into the idea that we're all trying to get better here, and hopefully we're a much better team at the end of the season than we were at the start. Even just that, rather than being this autocrat or someone who is sort of trying to be the authority and expert, that also calms people, and you can measure that biologically if you want, and also creates these conditions where people just trust the environment a bit more. But honestly, I've worked even with international teams where it takes 2 or 3 seasons before some of the people completely buy into all this.
So that was where I was going to come to next, is it's not something we just come in and it snaps. You snaps into place. It takes time to build.
Correct.
So, and I mean, obviously, there's absolutely no way that we can put an exact timeline on it, but you build it piece by piece. You don't sort of like suddenly come in and say, right, we're going to work on belonging, blah, 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 blah. You have to build it gradually, or do you have to make a big sea change?
There's no hacks or shortcuts here. I mean, someone like Gareth Southgate, who's done a good job with England football team, made them much more competitive. He talked at the start, he created a vision of what the team would be, the way they'd play, the environment. You can't expect people in that first meeting to sit there and go, oh, okay, yep, okay, you've sold me. Now I'm going to completely try. I'm going to tell you that I've actually got a confidence problem, that I am having these issues. And it doesn't happen like that. But what he is a good example of is just every day, every time they come into camp, every tournament with all the scrutiny and pressure, it's consistent. It's a super strength he's got. He doesn't go crazy one day. He doesn't do things against his word. He doesn't have a conversation with a player and then do the complete opposite. He just is consistently, and that is an extremely high trust environment that he's developed there. And that's the same rule for everybody.
Brilliant. Well, I'm going to finish there. I mean, obviously, there's, as you just said, there's no sort of shortcuts or hacks to get there. It takes a lot of time. And I think the thing about the consistency is really important. So Owen is one of the world's top performance coaches. We've talked already about working alongside Gareth Southgate, and we can see the success that England have had under Gareth, and certainly just the way that the team is fantastic. Also worked with Team GB at the Olympics, the Scotland rugby squad, South African cricket team, the Royal Ballet, and the command group of NATO. Royal Ballet to the command group of NATO seems maybe a very short step for some, but a very large step for others. His philosophy is build healthy environments to unlock the full potentials of others. You can contact him on LinkedIn, Owen Eastwood, and absolutely read his book, Belonging, the Ancient Code of Togetherness. So we're going to finish with some questions. Owen, how old are you?
54.
What coaching book or what book is by your bedside?
Normally around my bedside is Sacred Hoops by Phil Jackson. I think that's right. The best book on leadership and culture I've read.
Obviously he talks a lot about, does he explicitly say belonging? I mean, there's quite a lot of things around that.
He does. And he uses Indigenous ideas like I do. So.
Yeah. Which coach or teacher are you loving at the moment?
Pete Carroll. I've got a lot of time for him and those guys. But what I love about him at the moment is that a couple of years ago, he was regarded, because he turned 70, he was too old. He had an old team. They had given away a lot of their draft picks. They were an accident waiting to happen. And then, you know, at 71, he trades off his top defensive and offensive players, gets young guys in and draft picks in, and now rebuilding the team. We're completely against the odds, made the playoffs last season. And this year they've got a bumper crop of young guys coming in. And I just think it's sensational. I love to be, when I'm 72, just trying to take risks and get better and have the fire in my belly like he has.
Which team, sport, or subject would you love to coach at the moment?
I'll tell you what, I'd actually love to get into school sports right now. And the reason I would be motivated to do that is not because let's grab a bunch of kids and make them national champion. Actually, something very different, and that is the Global Mental Health Report has come out again last week, shows that 16 to 24-year-olds across 188 countries are suffering a really serious mental degradation in their well-being. And the main reason is their lack of connection and belonging to groups. They've been replaced by the superficiality of social media, et cetera, and it's having a real mental cost. And I hear that team sports and schools are starting to fall away a little bit, and I think it's one of the most important places you can ever learn what it's like to be in a healthy team environment, work hard with people, get to know them, and compete together.
Who's inspired you most?
I'd say Wayne Smith. You know, I've been very lucky to get to know him over the last probably couple of decades, and just his warmth and his willingness to share. And there's been moments in my career where I really was a bit out of my depth, and having someone like that who was just so open and understanding and helped me, and we still got a great relationship, so I'd say Wayne Smith.
And what would you tell your 20-year-old self to do more of?
Probably have a healthier relationship with feedback. I think when I was 20, quite a big bit insecure, not really very confident despite all the bravado. And any feedback which was critical, I'd take it as a personal slight and get angry with the person and completely miss the message. And I think that was pretty immature on my part. So if I could have avoided that, would have probably made me a bit better than I am today.
Okay. Owen, it's been brilliant to chat with you. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, wonderful to chat with you, Dan. We'll be right back.